Why? She asked.
I'm just curious, I said, and I don't want you to go yet.
I don't know what my age has got to do with anything, she said.
Kathy's been dead for 9 years now, I said. I want to know how long they bothered to wait before mining her genes to make you.
I'm 6 years old, she said.
I hope you don't mind if I say you don't look like most six-year-olds that I've met, I said.
I'm advanced for my age, she said. Then, that was a joke?
I know, I said.
People don't get that sometimes, she said. It's because most of the people I know are around the same age.
How does it work? I said. I mean, what's it like, being six, not having a past?
Jane shrugged.
I woke up one day and I didn't know where I was or what was going on. But I was already in this body and I already knew things. How to speak, how to move, how to think and fight. I was told I was in special forces and that it was time to start training, and my name was Jane Sagan.
Nice name, I said.
It was randomly selected, she said. Our first names are common names. Our last names are mostly from scientists and philosophers. There's a Ted Einstein and a Julie Pasteur in my squad. At first, you don't know that, of course, about the names. Later, you learn a little bit about how you are made, after they've let you develop your own sense of who you are. No one you know has many memories. It's not until you meet Realborn that you know that anything's really different about you. And we don't meet them very often. We don't really mix.
Realborn? I asked.
It's what we call the rest of you, she said.
If you don't mix, what were you doing at the commissary? I said.
I wanted a burger, she said. It's not that we can't, mostly. It's that we don't.
Did you ever wonder about who you were made from? I asked.
Sometimes, Jane said. But we can't know. They don't tell us about our progies, the people we're made from. Some of us are made from more than one, you know. But they're all dead anyway. Have to be, or they wouldn't use them to make us. And we don't know who knew them, and if the people who knew them get in the service, it's not like they'd find us most of the time. And you Realborn die pretty damn fast out here. I don't know anyone else who's ever met a progy's relative, or a husband.
Did you show your lieutenant the picture? I asked.
No, she said. He asked about it. I told him you sent me a picture of yourself and that I trashed it. And I did, so the action would register if he looked. I haven't told anyone about what we said. Can I have it again? The picture?
Of course, I said. I have others, too, if you want them. If you want to know about Kathy, I can tell you about her as well.
Jane stared at me in the dim room. In the low light, she looked more like Kathy than ever.
I ached just a little to look at her.
I don't know, she said, finally. I don't know what I want to know. Let me think about it. Give me that one picture for now, please.
I'm sending it now, I said.
I have to go, she said. Listen, I wasn't here, and if you see me anywhere else, don't let on that we've met.
Why not? I asked.
It's important for now, she said.
All right, I said.
Let me see your wedding ring, Jane asked.
Sure, I said,
and slipped it off to let her look at it. She held it gingerly and peered through it.
It says something, she said.
My love is eternal, Kathy, I said. She had it inscribed before she gave it to me.
How long were you married? She asked.
42 years, I said.
How much did you love her? Jane asked. Your wife, Kathy. When people are married for a long time, maybe they stay together out of habit.
Sometimes they do, I said. But I loved her very much. all the time we were married. I love her now.
Jane stood up, looked at me again, gave me back my ring, and left, without saying goodbye.
"Tachyons,"
said Harry as he approached my and Jessie's breakfast table.
"Bless you,"
said Jessie.
"Very funny,"
he said, sitting down.
"Tachyons may be the answer to how the Ray knew we were coming." "Well, that's great," I said. "Now, if only Jessie and I knew what tachyons were, we'd be a lot more excited about them."
"They're exotic subatomic particles," Harry said. "They travel faster than light and backwards through time. So far, they've just been a theory, because after all, it's difficult to track something that is both faster than light and going backwards in time. But the physics of skip-drive theory allows for the presence of tachyons at any skip. Just as our matter and energy translates into a different universe, tachyons from the destination universe travel back into the universe being left behind. There's a specific tachyon pattern a skip drive makes at a translation event. If you can spot tachyons forming that pattern, you'd know a ship with a skip drive was coming in and when."
"Where do you hear this stuff?" I said.
"Well, unlike the two of you, I don't spend my days lounging about," Harry said. "I've made friends in interesting places."
"If we knew about this tachyon pattern, or whatever it is, why didn't we do something about it before?"
Jessie asked.
"What you're saying is that we've been vulnerable all this time and just been lucky so far?"
"Well, remember what I said about tachyons being theoretical to this point," Harry said. "That's sort of an understatement. They're less than real. They're mathematical abstractions at best. They have no relation to the real universes in which we exist and move. No race of intelligence that we know of has ever used them for anything. They have no practical application."
"Or so we thought," I said. Harry gave a hand motion of assent.
"If this guess is correct, then it means that the Array have a technology that's well beyond what we have the capability to create ourselves. We're behind them in this technology race."
"So how do we catch up?" Jessie said.
Harry smiled.
"Well, who said anything about catching up? Remember when we first met on the Beanstalk and we talked about the colony's superior technology? You remember how I suggested they got it?"
"Through encounters with aliens,"
Jessie said.
"Right," Harry said. "We either trade for it or take it in battle. Now, if there really is a way to track tachyons from one universe to another, we could probably develop the technology ourselves to do it, but that's going to take time and resources we don't have. Far more practical to simply take it from the RA."
"You're saying the CDF is planning to go back to Coral," I said.
"Of course we are," Harry said. "But the goal now isn't just to take the planet back. It's not even going to be the primary goal. Now our primary goal is to get our hands on their tachyon detection technology and find a way to defeat it or use it against them."
"The last time we went to Coral, we got our asses kicked," Jessie said.
"We're not going to have a choice, Jessie," Harry said gently. "We have to get this technology. If the technology spreads, every race out there will be able to track colonial movement. In a very real sense, they'll know we're coming before we do."
"It's going to be a massacre again," Jessie said.
"I suspect they'll use a lot more of the special forces this time around," Harry said.
Speaking of which," I said, and then told Harry of my encounter with Jane the night before, which I'd been recounting to Jessie as Harry walked up.
Looks like she's not planning to kill you after all," Harry said, after I was finished.
"It must have been so strange to talk to her," Jessie said, "even though you know she's not really your wife."
"Not to mention being just 6 years old. Man, that's odd," Harry said.
"It shows, too," I said. "The being six part. She doesn't have much emotional maturity. She doesn't seem to know what to do with emotions when she has them. She threw me across the room because she didn't know how else to deal with what she was feeling."
"Well, all she knows is fighting and killing," Harry said. "We have a life of memories and experiences to stabilize us. Even younger soldiers in traditional armies have 20 years of experiences. In a real sense, these Special Forces troops are children warriors. It's ethically borderline.
I don't want to open any old wounds, Jesse said, but do you see any of Kathy in her?
I thought about it a moment. Well, she looks like Kathy, obviously, I said, and I think I saw a little of Kathy's sense of humor in her, and a little of her temperament. Kathy could be impulsive.
Did she ever throw you across the room?
Harry asked, smiling. I grinned back. Well, there were a couple of times that if she could have, she would have, I said.
Score 1 for genetics, Harry said.
Asshole suddenly clicked to life. Corporal Perry, the message read, your presence is required at a briefing with General Keegan at 1000 hours at Operational HQ in the Eisenhower module of Phoenix Station. Be prompt. I acknowledged the message and told Harry and Jesse.
And I thought I had friends in interesting places, Harry said.
You've been holding out on us, John.
I have no idea what this is about, I said. I've never met Keegan before.
He's only the commander of the CDF Second Army, Harry said.
I'm sure it's nothing important.
Funny, I said.
It's 9:15 now, John, Jesse said. You'd better get moving. You want us to walk with you?
No, please, finish breakfast, I said. It'll be good for me to have the walk. The Eisenhower module is only a couple of clicks around the station. I can make it in time.
I got up, grabbed a donut to eat on the way, gave Jesse a friendly peck on the cheek, and headed off. In fact, the Eisenhower module was more than a couple of clicks away, but my leg had finally grown in, and I wanted the exercise. Dr. Fiorina was right. The new leg did feel better than new, and overall I felt as if I had more energy. Of course, I had just recovered from injuries so grave it was a miracle that I lived. Anyone would feel like they had more energy after that.
Don't turn around, Jane said,
into my ear from directly behind me. I nearly choked on a bite of donut.
I wish you wouldn't keep sneaking up on me, I finally said, not turning around.
Sorry, she said. I'm not intentionally trying to annoy you, but I shouldn't be talking to you. Listen, this briefing you're about to go to.
How do you know about that?
I said.
It doesn't matter. What matters is that you agree to what they ask of you. Do it. It's the way you're going to be safe for what's coming up, as safe as can be.
What's coming up? I asked.
You'll find out soon enough, she said.
What about my friends? I said. Harry and Jesse, are they in trouble?
We're all in trouble, Jane said. I can't do anything for them. I worked to sell you as it is. Do this. It's important.
There was a quick touch of a hand on my arm, and then I could tell she was gone again.
Corporal Perry,
General Keegan said, returning my salute.
At ease.
I had been escorted into a conference room with more brass in it than an 18th-century schooner. I was easily the lowest-ranking person in the room. The next lowest rank, as far as I could tell, was a lieutenant colonel, Newman, my esteemed questioner. I felt a little queasy.
You look a little lost, son,
General Keegan said to me. He looked, as did everyone in the room and every soldier in the CDF, no more than in his late 20s.
I feel a little lost, sir, I said.
Well, that's understandable, Keegan said.
Please, sit down.
He motioned to an empty chair at the table. I took it and sat down.
I've heard a lot about you, Perry.
Yes, sir, I said, trying not to glance over at Newman.
You don't sound excited about that, Corporal, he said.
I'm not trying to be noticed, sir, I said.
Just trying to do my part. Be that as it may, you have been noticed, Keegan said. 100 shuttles managed to get launched over Coral, but yours was the only one to make it to the surface, in great part due to your orders to pop the shuttle bay doors and get the hell out of there.
He jerked a thumb to Newman.
Newman here has been telling me all about it. He thinks we should give you a medal for it.
Keegan could have said, "Newman thinks you should star in the Army's annual performance of Swan Lake," and I would not have been as surprised as I was. Keegan noticed the expression on my face and grinned. "Yes, I know what you were thinking. Newman has the best straight face in the business, which is why he asked the job he does. Well, what about it, Corporal? Think you deserve that medal?"
"Respectfully, sir, no," I said. "We crashed, and there were no survivors other than myself. It's hardly meritorious service. Beyond that, any praise of making it to the surface of Coral belongs to my pilot, Fiona Eaton."
"Pilot Eaton has already been decorated posthumously, Corporal," General Keegan said. "Small consolation to her, being dead as she is, but it's important to the CDF that such actions are noted somewhere by us. And despite your modesty, Corporal, you will be decorated as well. Others survived the Battle of Coral, but that was by luck. You took initiative and showed leadership in an adverse situation, and you've shown your capacity to think on your feet before. That firing solution against the Khonsu, your leadership in your training platoon. Master Sergeant Ruiz made special note of your use of the brain pal in the final training war game. I served with that son of a bitch, Corporal. Ruiz wouldn't compliment his mother for giving birth to him, if you know what I mean."
"I think I do, sir," I said.
"That's what I thought. So, a bronze star for you, son. Congratulations."
"Yes, sir," I said.
"Thank you, sir."
"But I didn't ask you here for that purpose," General Keegan said, and then motioned down the table.
"I don't believe you've met General Szilard, who heads our special forces. At ease, no need to salute."
"Sir," I said, nodding in his direction at least.
"Corporal," Szilard said, "tell me, what have you heard about the situation over Coral?"
"Not very much, sir," I said. "Just conversations with friends."
"Really?" Szilard said dryly. "I would think your friend, Private Wilson, would have given you a comprehensive briefing by now."
I was beginning to realize that my poker face, never very good, was even less so these days.
"Yes, of course we know about Private Wilson," Szilard said. "You might want to tell him that his snooping around is not nearly as subtle as he thinks it is."
"Harry will be surprised to hear it," I said.
"No doubt," Szilard said. "I also have no doubt he's also appraised you on the nature of the Special Forces soldiers. It's not a state secret, incidentally, although we don't put information on the Special Forces in the general database. Most of our time is spent on missions that require strict secrecy and confidentiality. We have very few opportunities to spend much time with the rest of you. Not much inclination, either."
"General Szilard and Special Forces are taking the lead on our counterattack on the array at Coral," General Keegan said. "While we intend to take the planet, our immediate concern is to isolate their tachyon detection apparatus, disable it without destroying it if we can, but destroy it if we must. Colonel Golden here," Keegan motioned to a somber-looking man next to Newman, "believes we know where it is. Colonel?"
"Very briefly, Corporal," Golden said. "Our surveillance before the first attack on Coral showed the array deploying a series of small satellites in orbits around Coral. At first we thought them to be spy satellites to help the array identify colonial and troop movement on the planet, but now we think it's an array designed to spot tachyon patterns. We believe the tracking station, which compiles the data from the satellites, is on the planet itself, landed there during the first wave of the attack."
"We think it's on the planet because they figure it's safest there," General Szilard said. "If it were on a ship, there's a chance an attacking CDF ship might hit it, if only by sheer luck. And as you know, no ship but your shuttle got anywhere close to the coral surface. It's a good bet it's there."
I turned to Keegan. "May I ask a question, sir?"
"Go ahead,"
Keegan said. "Why are you telling me this?" I asked. "I'm a corporal with no squad, platoon, or battalion. I can't see why I should need to know this."
"Well, you need to know this because you're one of the few survivors of the Battle of Coral and the only one that survived by something more than chance," Keegan said. "General Szilard and his people believe, and I agree,
that their counterattack has a better chance of succeeding if someone who was there in the first attack advises and observes the second. That means you.
With all due respect, sir, I said, my participation was minimal and disastrous.
Less disastrous than almost everyone else's, Keegan said. Corporal, I won't lie to you. I'd prefer we'd have someone else in this role. However, as it stands, we do not. Even if the amount of advice and service you can give is minimal, it is better than nothing at all. Besides, you've shown the ability to improvise and act quickly in combat situations. You will be of use.
What would I do? I asked.
Keegan glanced over to Xylard.
You'd be stationed on the Sparrowhawk, Xylard said. They represent the special forces with the most experience in this particular situation. Your job would be to advise the Sparrowhawk's senior staff on your experience at Coral, observe and act as liaison between CDF regular forces and special forces if one is required.
Would I fight? I asked.
You're a supernumerary, Xylard said. You would most likely not be required to participate in the actual engagement.
You understand that this assignment is highly unusual, Keegan said. As a practical matter, due to differences in mission and in personnel, regular CDF and special forces are almost never mixed. Even in battles in which the two forces are engaged against a single enemy, both tend to perform separate and mutually exclusive roles.
I understand, I said.
I understood more than they knew. Jane was stationed on the Sparrowhawk. As if following my train of thought, Xylard spoke up.
Corporal, I do understand that you had an incident with one of my people, one stationed on the Sparrowhawk. I need to know that there will be no other incidents like that one.
Yes, sir, I said. The incident was over a misunderstanding, a case of mistaken identity. It won't happen again.
Xylard nodded to Keegan.
Very well, Keegan said. Corporal, given your new role, I think your rank is deficit to the task. You are hereby promoted to lieutenant, effective immediately, and will present yourself to Major Crick, CO of the Sparrowhawk, at 1500. That should give you enough time to get your things in order and say your goodbyes. Any questions?
No, sir, I said. But I have one request.
Not the usual thing, Keegan said after I had finished. And in other circumstances, in both cases, I would say no.
I understand, sir, I said.
However, it will be arranged, and some good might come out of it.
Very well, Lieutenant. You're dismissed.
Harry and Jesse met me as soon as they could after I messaged them. I told them of my assignment and promotion.
You think Jane engineered this?
Harry said.
I know she did, I said. She told me she had. As it happens, I may actually turn out to be useful in some way, but I'm sure she planted a bug in someone's ear. I'm on my way in just a few hours.
We're being broken up again, Jesse said. And what's left of Harry's and my platoon is being split up, too. Our platoon mates are getting assignments to other ships. We're waiting to hear our own assignments.
Who knows, John?
Harry said.
We'll probably be back at Coral with you.
No, you won't, I said.
I asked General Keegan to advance you both out of general infantry, and he agreed. Your first term of service is done. You've both been reassigned.
What are you talking about?
Harry said.
You've been reassigned to CDF's military research arm, I said.
Harry, they knew about you snooping around. I convinced them you'd do less harm to yourself and others this way. You're going to work on whatever we bring back from Coral.
I can't do that, Harry said. I don't have the math for it.
I'm sure you won't let that stop you, I said.
Jesse, you're going to MR2, on the support staff. It's all I could get you on short notice. It's not going to be very interesting, but you can train for other roles while you're there, and you'll both be out of the line of fire.
This isn't right, John, Jesse said. We haven't served our time. Our platoon mates are going back out to fight while we'll be sitting here for something we didn't do. You're going back out there. I don't want this. I should serve my time.
Harry nodded.
Jesse, Harry, please, I said.
Look. Alan is dead. Susan and Thomas are dead. Maggie is dead.
My squad and my platoon are all gone. Everyone I've ever cared about out here is gone but you two. I had a chance to keep you two alive, and I took it. I couldn't do anything for anyone else. I can do something for you. I need you to be alive. You're all I have out here.
You have Jane,
Jesse said. I don't know what Jane is to me yet, I said, but I know what you are to me. You're my family now. Jesse, Harry, you're my family. Don't be angry with me for wanting to keep you safe. Just be safe. For me. Please.
Chapter 15 Sparrowhawk was a quiet ship. Your average troop ship is filled with the sounds of people talking, laughing, yelling, and going through the verbal motions of their lives. Special Forces soldiers don't do any of that crap. As was explained to me by the Sparrowhawk's CO when I came on board.
Don't expect people to talk to you, Major Crick said as I presented myself.
Sir? I said.
The Special Forces soldiers, he said. It's not anything personal, it's just we're not much for talking. When we're by ourselves, we communicate almost exclusively by brain pal. It's faster, and we don't have a bias towards talking like you do. We're born with brain pals. The first time anyone ever talks to us is with one of them, so it's the way we talk most of the time. Don't be offended. Anyway, I've ordered the troops to speak to you if they have something they need to get across.
Well, that's not necessary, sir, I said.
I can use my brain pal.
You wouldn't be able to keep up, Major Crick said.
Your brain is set to communicate at one speed and ours at another. Talking to Realborn is like talking at half speed. If you've talked to any of us for a great deal of time, you might notice we seem abrupt and curt. It's a side effect of feeling like you're talking to a slow child. No offense.
None taken, sir, I said.
You seem to communicate well. Well, as a CO, I spend a lot of time with non-special forces, Crick said. Also, I'm older than most of my troops. I've picked up a few social graces.
How old are you, sir? I asked.
I'll be 14 next week, he said. Now, I'll be having a staff meeting tomorrow at 0600. Until then, get yourself set up and comfortable. Have some chow and get a little rest. We'll talk more in the morning.
He saluted, and I was dismissed. Jane was waiting in my quarters.
You again, I said, smiling.
Me again, she said simply. I wanted to know how you're getting along.
Fine, I said. Considering I've been on the ship for 15 minutes.
We're all talking about you, Jane said.
Yes, I can tell by the endless chatter, I said.
Jane opened her mouth to speak, but I held up my hand.
That was a joke, I said. Major Crick told me about the brain pal thing.
It's why I like talking to you like this, Jane said. It's not like talking to anyone else.
I seem to remember you talking when you rescued me, I said.
We were worried about being tracked then, Jane said. Speaking was more secure. We also speak when we're out in public. We don't like to draw attention to ourselves when we don't have to.
Why did you arrange this? I asked her. Getting me stationed here on the Sparrowhawk.
You're useful to us, Jane said.